This is the Thinky Feely Tank Radio Hour. This is the Thinky Feely Tank Radio Hour.
This has been the Thinky Feely Tank.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Thinky Feely Tank. This is Entangler on air at K-Chung Radio. Sorry we're gone on way late, which is not unusual for me. It's actually kind of stressful. Maybe we talk about it later. And I have two other Rev Schoolers with me online. You all want to say hi?
I'm Splash. If you've ever listened to the show before, you may have heard my voice before. I'm not in the studio tonight. Sick tonight. I want to get other people sick.
And I am Tectonic. And you, if you've been a very long time listener, then you may have heard me before. But I've been here in a while. And I am coming to you live from the not fresh air of Wisconsin.
Well, welcome. How you all doing tonight? Want to do some check-ins? This is something that we do actually do in Rev School. We do check-ins, highs and lows of the week in Revolutionary Life Lesson. Do you want to do any check-ins?
Oh, I'm still not ready for this. It's a great idea that we should be doing this on.
I can do a check-in if you want a little more time to think about it.
Yeah, go for it.
Was it highs and lows of the week? Is that what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, highs and lows of the week, and then Revolutionary Life Lesson.
Okay. The low of the week has been an ongoing, we are dealing with the, air quality problems from the wildfires in Canada and also, I guess now Minnesota. So the air quality has literally been off the scale that they use to measure our air quality in terms of being bad. So, that has just been a general downer. Highs, there have been a lot of highs. Probably one of the biggest ones was my granddaughter started Aikido class at the same dojo where I took Aikido way back in the day, a long time ago. And I should add, I have attained the rank of fifth Q in Aikido, which is basically the one they give you when you learn how to tie your gi together. So I didn't make it, but it was just very cool to see. She's very excited about it, and we were doing roles today together. So that was kind of a high point. And Revolutionary Lesson, so I do have one, because we went to, I spent the last 3 days, a little mini vacation in a little town called Manitowoc, which is on the shore of Lake Michigan. And toured their maritime museum. They built submarines during World War II. And they had the whole story of how in 1941 they shifted into wartime, mode, and had never built a submarine before, but they figured out how to do it, and they started putting them off the line. Every 6 months was another submarine and all these incredible things and all the people coming together. And I was incredibly depressed because I looked at that and I'm like, It is truly a amazing feat of engineering and people coming together to accomplish something. But the thing they were accomplishing was figuring out how to kill other people. And I'm like, why couldn't there be that kind of a movement and things to you know, feed the hungry, house people, you know, do things like that. You know, why does it have to be only that kind of killing thing? It's just, it felt very depressing that there was this huge celebration of this great group effort, but yet, you know, people are still homeless and things. So that was a little, highlighted the ongoing need for revolution. Let's just put it that way.
Thank you for that share. I was going to say, like, oh, this could lead into the RevCon.
You're still on mute.
Oh, sorry. There's, okay, I'm not on mute on the radio. However, I have, like, Reframer listening, and they don't hear our voices. They just hear the the intro over and over again. Oh, okay, wait, no. Now they said they heard me say hi. Oh, wait, okay. Okay, whatever.
It must be a delay.
It's also very hot. Do you want to share, Splash?
Sure. I guess I'll say the high point of my week was at Lavia today on Meet the Hollywoods. And went up the boulevard from La Cienega to Island, and then Hollywood from Highland to at least Vermont. I turned around to Vermont, but it is, you know, beautiful. It's always fun when places that are taken over, that are like owned by cars, dominated by cars, I sort of like get this carnival of non-car movement on them, and such having thousands of people riding their bikes on Santa Monica Boulevard was nice, and you know, gives this little dream of like, you know, degrowth future or a post-collapse kind of future where there aren't cars burning fossil fuels. But you know, my revolutionary dreams don't require collapse. It's kind of inevitable, I guess. Yes, maybe building dual power is about think the impact of collapse, and certainly like infrastructure. All you really need, well, not really, but
your audio splashes a little bit choppy.
Ah, damn it.
Like going in and out a little bit. Reframer, or like robotic, Reframer's listening on the live stream and mentioned, just FYI, hopefully you can fix that. it's funny because we just did this, like this morning for Rev School meeting, the highs and lows and revolutionary life lessons. With Splash, yours was different. Mine is kind of the same. I think I'm like... Okay, so I recently stopped smoking cigarettes, listening to The Easy Way to Stop Smoking, and it's been a little over a week, and I'm feeling very, like, stressed and anxious, but I don't, and so I'm like, is that because I'm detoxing, or is it because I'm stressed about, I think, like, doing the RevCon planning and outreach, I get very stressed about that. The outreach is somehow, difficult for me or something. I think maybe we can talk about that when we get into like our ideas of what RevCon is. So I've been feeling like pretty like intensely, yeah, like it, like bodily kind of stressiness and anxiety. And then, so that's kind of like a low, high, and then also like not getting my work done. You know what it is? I think it's actually kind of like me recognizing and admitting to myself these ways of being that I have, ways of being that are not like serving me anymore. So maybe it's that, which is also a life lesson. And then also like, I guess a high would be, I mean, I'm very excited about RevCon, and then also me and some friends, like the comb basically, are going to a writing retreat in the desert starting tomorrow. And so I'm excited to do that. And yeah, so here we are, RevCon. RevCon is in exactly 4 weeks from this weekend. So some of the things I thought maybe we can talk about is, like, I think something Reframer said about, like, and also I think the nature of open spaces or unconferences are maybe a little confusing. Also, like, what is the RevCon? Like, what is this thing? So we're doing this show to kind of talk about maybe some questions or that come up, FAQs, and also what our dreams and fears are around RevCon. Yeah. And then, you know, we have Tectonic here, who is where the person who I learned about open spaces. So, like, RevCon has kind of like a, wait, I'm going to turn this fan on. Is this, like, I hope it's not distracting to the mic. I will try to, but, like, it's, like, really hot.
You can't hear it at all.
Okay. You can't hear it? Okay. Sometimes it makes.
Nope.
Okay, cool. Maybe just a little kind of backstory of how this kind of started, how RevCon kind of is in its, like, form that it is right now. So it started back when Splash and Phantasma and I had this meeting where, and Rev School meeting, and it was, like, called, like, the, I titled it, like, the best ideas meeting, because we were talking about, like, Rev School, or, you know, we call the Revolution School Rev School for short, and about, like, recruiting. And so we kind of, like, envisioned this kind of, like a drag recruitment convention thing, you know, and it was, like, going to be really campy and, lot, and, like, really draggy and, like, kind of dragging the idea of a convention or dragging the idea of, like, recruitment. So we're very excited about that. That started
a revolutionary job fair kind of situation.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Do you want to say more about that, Splash?
No, that was, I just remembered that aspect of it. I'd forgotten about this. I guess the other thing I'll say is how I've always, like, through both academic and activist spaces, like, any kind of convention or conference has always been so energizing to me, and, like, both, like, meeting, you know, some of my best friends are conference friends, and some of my it's been, like, really pivotal life path stuff for me has come from going to conferences, and so I think that was what kind of started to shift it, right, from the recruitment and job fair thing to, like, what if we actually had a conference? And I think at some point I talked about having, like, doing really academic drag of it, which I think would have been too much.
No, this is perfect. Also, I remember we're not supposed to look at each other. We're supposed to have the cameras off to preserve the radio feeling. I'm so glad that you brought up your love of conferences. And how that like, you meet your friends, you know, like, your best friend, not, you didn't say best friends, but lifelong friends, or, like, long-term friends. Because conference, I haven't gone to a lot of conferences, but the ones that I have gone to feel very much like summer camp. And the way that I hear Reframer, who is someone who goes to quite a few conferences, it feels a little, it sounds like that. Like, you know, it's like a reunion where you go to every year, and, like, people have their home conference. And, like, we were joking because we were, like, watching Bridgerton at the same time about, like, this is, like, the contemporary or, like, modern day kind of, like, Bridgerton, or, like, in academia with these, like, conferences.
Like a ball?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. I'll take it. Yeah.
Totally, yeah. So then, you know, like, when we were talking, me and you and Phantasma, like we were really interested in, like, the dragging it, like, the possibility, like, the actual genuine connection and, like, joy that's in conferences, and also, like, understanding it's, like, you know, it's very, like, it's expensive to go, like, even if you present, you have to pay for it, like, you have to pay for the ticket, and then also pay for, like, sometimes membership, and then also pay for, like, travel and lodging and all that
banquet stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's quite pricey, you know? And that way it's kind of like Bridgerton Ball. And so, like, we're, like, so there's, like, conference. I mean, the funny thing about, like, RevCon or the use of con, that it could mean conference or convention, although the way that we're using it, like, RevCon is kind of like Comic-Con, so that implies, like, a convention, which is also, like, different from a conference. Yes, in terms of its feel and
sure, yeah.
And then so trying to like kind of play with both of them, thinking about, would you say, the RevCon?
Yeah.
Also, Tectonic, if you want to jump in at any time. Okay, yeah, so that's what, okay. And then because I think this is an interesting kind of like thing to talk about, like just like cons and conferences and what a Revolution Unconference is or a RevCon is or can be. And so I had never gone to a con. The first one I went to was DomCon in LA. Because I was also like on my kink kind of journey. And that's when I first learned of a con. Oh, I think that's where the con came in. Because at first we were talking about conferences. And then I went to DomCon. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it could be like a con. And then I, Devil Mask Studio, which is like this rope bondage studio in downtown LA, they were having like this, they have like these half birthday parties. It was their first one. And they invited Tectonic out of retirement to facilitate a ropin space. It's like an open space, ropin space. And so that's where I learned about open spaces. And that's kind of how also Tectonic got involved. Also, we're like partners or lovers or something. would you like to say anything, Tectonic?
Oh, no, I enjoy hearing you try and thread that needle. It's interesting to me to hear you both talk about the conventions being like summer camp, because my thought is, well, yes, but that is entirely depends on how subjective your experience of summer camp was. A lot of the first conventions that I went to within the kink world or in general felt very almost unwelcoming, because there were cliques of people that have been there a long time, or, you know, they, like you say, it's expensive. And actually the open space concept itself came out of a dissatisfaction with the way that certain business conventions were being held, and academic conventions. People were tired of, you know, they would hear you know, speakers that they weren't necessarily interested in, or who, you know, would have a 2-hour slot to fill with a subject that went like 45 minutes. And the person who invented it, Harrison Owen, he designed those kinds of conventions and tried to make them good and worked really hard and got really frustrated, because he, in one particular case, apparently the only positive feedback he got from all of the hundreds of convention goers was that the coffee breaks had been okay. And so almost as a fit of pique, said, fine, I'm going to make a convention that's nothing but coffee breaks. And that's kind of where this first came out of, was through being unhappy with the way that the original or conventional conventions went. And I oftentimes will, like, I've gotten to the point where now I do enjoy regular conventions and things like that. I'm actually planning on hoping to go to one in on ADHD in December. That's going to be a normal one. But one of the things about conventions is you go and they hand you a little booklet and they say, if you go to this place at this time, this person will talk about this subject for this much time. And then you have the next session and it says, this person will not talk about this subject for this much time. And it's all set in stone, you know, and they probably had these, not set in stone, but it's fairly concrete. And, you know, sometimes they have open sessions, but a lot of the stuff that people get that changes the way things are, that is new and exciting, happens in the in-between spaces. In the places where two people listen to it and one says, hey, did you hear about this other thing? And they say, oh, yeah, sure. And then that leads into a new discussion. And so the idea was that, could we create an environment where that kind of thing can happen just naturally, where people can talk about what they actually want to talk about right then and be free to either participate or not, and also talk about it for as long or as short a time as they wanted. You know, no need to pad out your talk or, you know, have an extra 34 slides or something like that. You can just you know, talk as long as it needs to. And if it does need to go longer than 2 hours, one of the first ones I ever ran, there was a conversation that was going to be led by a woman about kink and spirituality. She had never done any kind of a presentation or talk before, but that talk lasted 4.5 hours with the people there. But that was because that was all the stuff that they had to talk about with that subject. So I don't put down cons as much as I might have when I first was all very gung-ho about open spaces. I feel that both of them serve a purpose, and I could go on ridiculously long about the different psychological and social aspects of it and things like that. But the main thing is that I trust that it works, and it works even when it seems like it shouldn't work. I was very excited. You know, the more I got to know the Rev School folks in general, the more I like, these are people with really fascinating things to talk about. And I really love being able to be a part of the conversations when I can. And so the thought of having a whole weekend unconference with all of y'all and people and being able, I'm just really excited to just be in that environment. And help make it happen. And scene.
Thank you for that. Sorry, I was having trouble. Like, I have to push many buttons to get back on the air. Thank you for that. I find it like part of the open space. I feel like unless you experience it, it's hard to explain. And I remember when I first reading the DMS half birthday kind of invitation for the Ropin space, I was very confused about, I was like, whoa, this sounds like a inside thing, or like these people know each other. I don't know why that I thought that,
it's,
but that's what
it's
I thought.
A very, yeah, it's a very, it's a hard thing to wrap your head around until you've been to it. And then it takes about 15 minutes to get used to it. And then you're suddenly like, oh yeah, this, you know, why doesn't this happen all the time? In fact, that was usually the most common thing that would happen at the end of any of the open spaces, was somebody would ask either when is the next one, or they'd say, hey, can we do one of these in our town or our place?
Mm-hmm. I know, I want to do one at Otis Convocation. I was going to ask about that. But yes, I went to their like open studio, and someone kind of described it in this way that was very, yeah, like basically like anyone who shows up, there's no, like how we've been talking about kind of like more traditional conferences or conventions, there's like a set, you know, set speakers, topics and stuff like that, set times. This is more, it's like entirely participant driven. So it's like made by the people who are present. So anyone present can propose to do a session of whatever you want. I mean, within the theme, hopefully, of revolution, and this year's theme is liberation for all, which we can talk about a little later too. Or you don't have to facilitate anything. You can just go and attend someone's sessions. And they can be for any amount of time, as we kind of talked about, ranging from, like, I don't know, a couple minutes to many, several hours. And it sounds a little bit, like, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, this is cool, because I'm, like, really interested in, like, you know, power dynamics and, like, how we share information. And, like, I really like the idea. And, you know, part of my interest in revolution is, like, you know, trying to breach or, like, not script or perform with that perpetuates binaries, hierarchies, and capital. So I really like the kind of, what it sounded like, kind of like a non-hierarchical way of sharing information. So that was like kind of my interest in it. And then I went to it, and it was like amazing. Yeah. So I was like one of those, yeah, definitely one of those people who was like, oh, I want to, you know, when's the next one? Or like, I want to use this format for like RevCon. And so we're here now.
Yeah, I think that It probably could have been an essential thing, because I do think the academic conference tradition, yeah, it has its it has its good points, but like so much of that is about like reconstituting the academic hierarchies and like all of the major hierarchy and funding and reputation and expertise and authority and all this stuff. Doing that, even in, maybe there was a draggy way to do that would have been, carnivalesque version of it, but really, making it this completely emergent and like de-authoritized version. And then also, I think, often with conferences, you have to submit your paper 6 months in advance, and you propose your paper 6 months in advance, and then like 3 months in advance, you might finalize it, and then like by the time you get there, everyone's research has moved on. It can still be an incredibly fertile cross-pollination, but particularly the way things are right now, where week over week, the stuff that we're dealing with can evolve and adapt. And like even the ways that things are shifting on data centers, for example, and resistance to data centers. Maybe 3 months ago people would have proposed those talks, but certainly a year ago they wouldn't have proposed those talks. And they wouldn't have had the same material to talk about. And it would have been, 10% of their slides would have been like, and here's some new developments that are happening, but I haven't had a chance to reevaluate everything I'm doing in light of these new developments. And so being able to be present with what is present for everyone in the moment on the day we show up seems really strong. And then also, a lot of mobility being such a crucial aspect of it, where like, even in the worst case, sometimes I worry, like, what if it is taken over by right-wing agitators, and like people have to be interested in their topics to go to their sessions, and so like they could be talking to each other about their stuff in one corner of the room, but like nobody else needs to go to those things, and if they realize that's what it is, they can leave. And and so it feels resilient to the kinds of undermining that the basic kinds of undermining that I can imagine. There's still plenty of ways that any organized activity can be subverted, and that's, I think, an interesting topic to be talking about on the day.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I want to, again, and you'll have to stop me if I share too many anecdotes. I've done this for so many times and so long that I have a bazillion of them. But speaking specifically to that, one of the often concerns is people say, well, what if somebody gets up there who doesn't know what they're talking about? And the first answer is people have built-in bullshit detectors. And I have seen, in particular, one that comes to mind is just coincidentally happened to be a cis white male. But he was very confident in what he was going to talk about, and he had a big audience that came up, and he started talking, and I honestly don't remember what the subject was, but I know that people had really internalized a lot of mobility by the time he started talking. And as people started to drift away, as they realized that he was just kind of full of it, you could just see this sort of look of panic in his eyes as he realized that he did not have a captive audience anymore, and he ended up having nobody there. And on the other hand, there was another situation where somebody was going to do a class on basically a men's rights activist. Okay. And within the ones that I ran were heavily queer and progressive and oriented. And so you would think there weren't many people that would be there. But there was one person who went there, a person of color, who sat down with him, and they talked for the entire duration of the thing. Nobody's minds were changed. Nobody came to any great realization, except that it was very evident that the two of them saw each other as individuals, as people. It wasn't a case of us versus them. It was, I'm me, this is another person, and there was a recognition on both sides. which, you know, has often been talked about, you know, that, you know, the idea of getting along is not necessarily everybody thinking the same way. It's everybody understanding that the people who are thinking are people. And it was a beautiful thing to see. And I actually raised my hand also in the Zoom just because I know, Jennifer, you had said something about changing that name again. It was originally the Law of Two Feet, and I wanted to make it more accessible, especially after I was giving that talk in front of a person who only had one leg. And he was grinning at me the whole time as I was talking about Law of Two Feet. So I called it the Law of Mobility, but I think you had a different even better name for it?
Yeah, I was thinking of like using law of agency, because the idea, I think what Tectonic is talking about is like, since it's like there's something, because of the format lends itself to like that it's not constrained or what is it, has to like aligned to certain kind of time frames. I don't know, there's a better word for that. That like and it's encouraged that, you know, like you like if you're there, that you get to decide what session you want to go to and if you want to stay there. And it kind of reminds me of this like practice that I learned through the Brazilians toolkit that was developed by Nkem Ndefo, who is one of the guests in the Thinky Philly Tank, the Bay Thinky Philly Tank number one, of like this practice of asking like, you know, like questions like how do I feel? And how do I know how I feel, what I feel, or like, you know, where am I on the stress relaxation continuum and stuff like that? And then like, how do I know? So I like kind of, I think about those questions, I think, when I'm like thinking, when I'm deciding if I want to be in a place, you know, like what's my body, like how does my body feel in terms of like stress relaxation? And like, how do I know that? Is it, you know, because of something I'm hearing or something, you know, my emotional state or a certain behavior or whatever? Or like in this case, it would be like, you know, whatever someone's talking about and the people present. And like asking that question of like, do I want to be here? I feel like it's like a somatic practice that like, that is about like how, like the developing a certain kind of agency, like the ability to act by asking yourself these questions. Does that make sense? It was a very convoluted way how I explained that.
I get what you're getting at. I do wonder if and it does sound like something that I've never actually been to an open space. I've been hearing about them for decades now, I guess, at this point. And so, like, I've been on board, I've wanted to go to one, and I'm excited to be going to one. But it does sound a little bit like what you're describing, something that is a property of it. Sometimes with assigning facilitation roles in meetings, you can, like, make one person the timekeeper, one person the agenda keeper, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, like, so that person is completely empowered to like do that thing, and there's not, and then, you know, and even someone who feels that time or agenda is creeping can like ask the timekeeper to do a time check or whatever. And there's something about being specifically empowered to walk out of a boring talk or walk out of an obnoxious talk or an informative talk that I feel does deserve to be centered at the beginning. Mm-hmm. The law of mobility, and then like the property of agency. Like I think the agency is key, and I think it is something that
I like.
I would like to find more ways for us to cultivate it in the space, and center that as a thing.
Yes,
and that's the fifth law.
That gives me another question that I've been having about our role as facilitators or hosts. You know, what is the, like, what do we, because in some ways it's kind of like seemingly easy to set up an open space because we don't have to get speakers. We don't have to do this and da 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 da. We just like get the venue. I mean, it's turned out more than that, but like somehow I feel a certain kind of responsibility or some kind of something to create the space for these things to happen. So I also like the, you know, like definitely the the law of mobility, or that it was originally like, you know, the kind of ableist law of 2 feet. And then the kind of, it is the only law, you know, there's like four principles and then one law, which is that, which we can change to like law, you know, the law of agency or the empowerment principle, something.
I think the reason I like law of agency even better is, you know, first, definitely because of that. The original one was sort of very simplistic of, oh, if you don't like what's going on in front of you, go somewhere that you, you know, if you're not benefiting from or contributing to what's going on in front of you, go somewhere you can. Which sounds good at first, but then I think with the idea of agency, you're adding in the idea of, you may be benefiting from the thing in front of you, but maybe you need to go process it, or maybe this is not the time when you can participate in it. You know, there's not a judgment call there, or maybe it's not that you go somewhere that you can. Maybe you're going to go somewhere that you want to process what you've been hearing, or you want to go somewhere and you know, sit quietly or whatever.
I got to pee.
Or you got, yeah, whatever it may be. Yeah, exactly. And so it's that bodily awareness thing that I think is one of the reasons I like it, is that it sort of opens up to, you know, your choices aren't stay or go. They are, you know, really get in touch with your what you're feeling at the moment and act in accordance to what is going to be most constructive for you.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as facilitators and timekeepers, it's not so much that it's interesting. I haven't, even though I'm familiar with the term timekeeper, I haven't thought of it in that way. You know, the hoped for process, you know, if something goes, our job is basically to just let people know when a space might be expected to be available or when it is available. So if somebody is teaching or doing a session, you know, you'll unobtrusively get within eyesight of the person who's leading the session and just hold up your hand for five. I'm holding up my hand, even though I can see it, you know, five minutes, you know, and that just lets them know, you know, and in an unobtrusive way. And if it looks like they're not done with the discussion, then you have several different choices as a facilitator. Like it may be that there's another space that is open that isn't being used, and you go to the person that was going to be in that space and say, hey, you're going to go in space number one, but the conversation there really isn't done. We have a, you know, space number two is open. Would you mind doing your session there? And then, you know, they move that there. Or it could be that, you know, the person in session two says, no, I have to do it in one. That's the only place that I can do the session. In which case, you go to that first one and you say, hey, they really need to be in this area. So I found this section of hallway where you can all move and continue your discussion there. Like, that could be it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is all about finding ways to make it work. More often than not, people will look at each other and be like, no, I think we're done. I think we're done. Or somebody says, oh, hey, I didn't realize the time had gone so fast. I really want to go to that session that's in area five. So they'll run to go over there, you know. So it never really, I've only one time had it happen where it was a dissonant note where somebody felt entitled to the space. And that was a problematic, and it was mainly problematic because they tried to sort of argue it amongst each other, instead of coming to the facilitator to say, hey, how can we resolve this? So, but you know, for the most part, it is a very fluid thing. And I've seen some things go on for hours and hours and hours, and I've seen some things start out. Usually they're practical things, like here's how you tie this knot, and it takes 5 minutes and everybody's done and they go on to something else.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, so it sounds like the roles that we will be playing as like the hosts is like, I keep thinking about like, you know, we're in kind of like chrononormative time matrix, you know, and space, in terms of like, we have a limited time and it's supposed to, you know, and also we are, you know, we live in that world, so our bodies also are part of that too. But So what it sounds like what we're doing is that we are just reminding people of this kind of like time, space time that we exist in, and checking in to see if they can like end at the time that they said they were going to end, or they need more time, or they need a different space, and then we help kind of move that along. So that's like one thing. That's like a structural thing. And so I'm also thinking about like what are, you know, because, you know, the ones that you've done are have been like rope based, you know, and the one that I went to was also rope. So there were certain
based, I guess.
Yeah, kink and rope bondage stuff. Like, and so I remember like they had like things set up so that people can do demos and like, you know, stuff like that. One thing that I, with this specific RevCon and open space on Revolution, some things that I've been thinking about are like, yeah, like these questions of like, how can we create space that would encourage both structurally, and I think open space does a great job about that, and then also how we're like framing it or something, how we're talking about it, to, you know, like to generate something that we're dreaming of, and maybe this gets into our Revolution dreams, but also I'm like, maybe I'm being too handsy or something, you know, and just let it be, and trust. But also I feel like that the kind of the subject that we're engaging with, I don't really want to use the word deserves, but I feel like it's so at least very important to me, and I think a lot of people, that it also needs some kind of framing or something. And one of the kind of, I guess, concerns that I have is like, it being just mostly talk, because that's something we talk about in Rev School, about like it being primary discursive, like what we're talking about, and not as many actions. And what are those actions? So I get a little bit like concerned about that with RevCon, and I've heard that maybe from a couple people too, asking about that.
Yeah, actually, that's a key thing that I hope we'll spend some planning on in the next 4 weeks, is like, I've been hearing the word activations recently for like it's giving people stuff to do, but like, you know, just like a big poster, big sheet of paper where people can like ask with maybe a few different sheets of paper with a different prompt, right? Like, the revolution will be blank or it will be blank, and people ask people to fill in the two blanks, or like just like making a wall of revolutionary dreams, you know, like just a few different places where people can can. But, you know, that's still language based, so that's a thing. But like, but I do think that making the whole thing, yeah, engage different modalities of expression and action is going to be important.
Totally. Like, I was thinking there could be like, you know, a station. I know, like a station that has tables that people can bring things if they want to make, I don't know, like make something, like you said. Some of that stuff, and then we'll have like a space that's mostly for talking, and then maybe a space that has no chairs, it's for movement practices, I don't know, and then maybe we'll, you know, like we'll have like a place that has a projector and stuff like that. One thing that I've been thinking about is like, what is the action? You know, kind of, you were kind of getting into it, Splash, where you're like, okay, it's still kind of discursive, or like it remains in the con, and so there are certain kind of limits as to, unless like we're like a group's like, oh, we're going to go to the street right now, and we're going to do something, which could happen, which would be amazing. But like, what is the action? Like, what are the act? What is?
Yeah, I mean, I think another prompt of what action are we going to take today, or what action are you going to take today, to be really generative? Like, how? Like, you know, because sometimes, I know we've said that the theme is liberation for all, but it's so like, but you know, yeah, like supposing that the revolution started on the day of RevCon, like what actions did everyone take to make that?
Ooh, I love that question.
True, right?
Hell yeah, like that. That to me seems like, because it's like, it's whenever, okay, action to me feels like when it's tied to my daily, the way I move through the world. Like, so your question of like, what did I do today before I got here, that is like leading up to the revolution starting right now. You know, like that feels like very to me like it's doing something. Yeah. So thanks for that.
If I could express a couple of thoughts about that, and they're just thoughts, because, you know, this, I am a facilitator in this RevCon. I used to have friends who would go to multiples of these. I used to have friends. I don't have friends anymore. But I used to have friends who would do many of these cons with me, and a lot of them would know that there would come a point during the day at some point when I would be worried that it seemed like the room was low energy, or that, you know, or I, you know, the session board wouldn't be filling up as fast as I would have expected, or something like that. And they sort of knew that the thing that they needed to do then was come up next to me and just look at me and say, "Hey, Gray, trust the process." This a little more directly expressed to me by the person who taught me the most about it, a professional open space trainer and facilitator named Lisa Heft. She's now retired, but I told her once, you know, I said, "Hey, I'm really worried that, you know, people might leave during lunch. You know, they might go off and go to a cafe or something and end up, you know, going off shopping or whatever. Like, what, you know, this means that it's, you know, does this mean that they're, you know, the open space wasn't interesting enough for them?" And she looked at me and said, it sounds to me what you're describing is that the open space is expanding to include the cafes and the shopping districts and the things like that."
Nice.
And she again and pointed out to me the difference between encouraging people to do what they need to do and then at the same time having expectations of what they were going to do.
Totally.
And it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, it's a revolutionary act in and of itself,
yeah,
to not have an expectation that people will take a certain action or that there'll be a certain thing done. It's really difficult. I wouldn't even say that I succeeded at it most of the time.
Thank you.
It's not being attached to the outcome. It's kind of a Zen type thing of, you know, the our job as facilitators is to create the space, not to dictate where it comes, and not to, yeah, and that's my opinion and my view. I also look at it as, having said that, I will 100% support whatever areas we do. I love the idea of having a movement space available and other things like that. I would hesitate to say, you know, if we get too attached to an outcome, it can take us out of the in the moment miracles that have happened. I mean, just coming to this thing, not that there's anything else going on in LA in summer on the weekend, for the entire day, but the fact that they just chose to attend is a revolutionary act in and of itself.
I'm wondering what the difference is between wanting an outcome and then attending to space and time. Do you know what I mean? Because I also think, like, when I do have fears, they become very useful analytics to tell me about what I'm afraid. You know, like when I have an expectation, it's data, because it tells me, like, what. I'm afraid of, and so then I get to, like,
what's the question I have for you? What are you afraid of? Like, what is your fear there?
I think I, like, vacillate between being too being too focused on, like, these kind of structural things, like admin things. I don't know, like, and then I start feeling like controlly or something, or I'm not attending to the quote unquote right thing, which maybe I should be, like, doing more outreach or something, but then I'm like, feel weird about that, or like talking more about revolution, you know, like things like that. I think I'm getting, like, mixed up between, like, things that are, like, that feel like structural, and then things that are like maybe more like I don't know, creating space and the energy and like the, how do I create, you know, how do we create the space? Does that make sense?
I get that. I mean, I felt all those things. This sounds very familiar. It's a matter of, I think it has always helped to just continually ask myself, you know, is the thing that I want to control something I can actually control, like outreach, whatever it is. And, you know, right now, is this what energy is needed, or is the energy that's needed? And this is literally, this is called the facilitator's power move, which is you step back and you put your hands in your pockets and you just don't do anything. Because people tend to expect, based on other conventions, that the staff are going to do things, they're going to make things move. And when you step back and you say, no, you know, our job is done, we've created the environment. What happens here is up to you. Whatever happens is the only thing that could happen. It's up to you. That takes people a second to get used to, or a while to get used to sometimes. But it can be beautiful. But yeah, it is a different situation. And I don't know. It's hard to think of it's setting up an environment and then trusting that what the people in the environment do is the thing that should have happened. You know, it's that principle.
Totally.
Whoever shows up are the right people.
And well, I believe that, but happens, I still think that the way that we set it up is part of it too, or something, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Also, I think we went off air because every framer was listening, and I think it's because there was another show streaming from Musa and kicked us off, maybe. But we still have the recording, I hope. Let me.
I was going to say, oh no, that was golden.
that was still have.
Yeah.
I will say, I another thing that can help with that, Jennifer, maybe, is when people are empowered to do the space, like we don't say, hey, you have to have the chairs in this particular configuration.
Oh, right. I don't think I would ever do that.
Like, no, I know. So that's what I'm saying. It's like you can trust them.
It's more the leading up to it. And I think it's more about like it in context with revolution. So I'm constantly thinking about like, is this how, you know, kind of slash your question, like how, what am I doing? What are we doing leading up to this, to the RevCon that is, you know, if RevCon is the start of the revolution, like what are we doing with setting up this event that is revolutionary? Is that, I don't know, maybe you could state it better, but
it's, I mean, sometimes I do think that we're like, I have a mix of trust in the process and like, yeah, and this feeling that like I have a hesitation, even like even that framing of like, how can we take credit for kicking off the revolution at this conference, right? Because that's, which is not what I really mean. What I mean is like, how the people who showed up today, like become irrevocably activated or whatever.
That's what I thought you meant.
But it's sort of like, I have this, one of my anxieties is like, I'm going to start, once I don't have a cold anymore, I'm going to start doing outreach into these places, and these people who have never seen me before are going to be like, hey, you're going to have this person who's like not part of the community, not engaged with their stuff right now, being like, come to our thing. Right. I haven't come to your thing.
Totally.
You come to my thing.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel. Oh my God. It feels like I'm trying to convince, I like, oh, there's so many things that are involved with outreach that don't, that are, don't feel revolutionary, that points out all the ways that I am not, that I don't outreach in my life, you know? I think that's the thing that is like really fucking me up.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, I think, is I feel like I'm hearing a lot of pressure that I feel like you're putting on yourselves, that, you know, this has to be like, you know, words like irrevocably and the kickoff and all this stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, I can't think of any revolution where the very first meeting of them all resulted in everything happening. Like, it there's a reason it's called movement, is because you have to have a series of changes.
Yeah.
And so it could be that this is the first one where we discover what is needed, and discover what the other questions are that are asked. Maybe the next one, you know, this theme is liberation for all. Maybe the second one is figuring out what the word liberation means for different people. You know, maybe it's, you know, there could be different themes like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think the important thing to do is to, have it. And then afterwards, we will know more about what is necessary or what is, what will make it work better.
For sure.
Yeah. What's needed.
I believe that. I just don't fucking like working. I think I'm just like a lazy motherfucker, like, that doesn't want to, you know, and then also because it means I have to change my whole fucking life or something, you know. Now I gotta be like social and go to places, and it's highlighting like how maybe I don't like that. I don't know. I mean, I want to like that though. Also, I mean, I feel like I dug myself into a hole.
There are many ways to contribute. It doesn't necessarily have to be social or physical or anything else. But.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Thank you, Splash. Thank you, Tectonic, too. But we should probably wrap it up because I think we started around, like, 7:20?
Yeah, but about 15 minutes late. Yeah. So I think it's perfect.
Cool. And the framer was listening, and they said it was very, because I was like, is it interesting? And they're like, yes, I wish I could hear more.
Probably a good time, like in the last 5 minutes or whatever, to restate where, what, when, how people can find out more, stuff like that.
Hell yeah, this is why you're here. This is why you're my maestro. Okay, so does anyone want to read it? Not me.
Not my first radio. Sorry.
August, the main event, you know, the actual convention is August 15th. 2026. I think people should stir up at 9 or 9:30. Stir up at 9:30. We're going to kick off events at 10. At Plunder Park Fiesta Hall in West Hollywood, California. But also Friday night, we're going to have a meetup. Is that the Guac Daddy one? Yes. Friday night at Guac Daddy. And then Saturday night at the Formosa. You go on Tangler.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I guess we're announcing it. The places, the secret venues. Yeah, as Splash said, the main event is Saturday. So Friday is at 7 at Guac Daddy, which is literally next door to Plumber Park. And then Saturday is the actual unconference. Doors open at 9:30 with light refreshments, and then we start around 10, and then we go through the open space, make the session board together, and then the session ends around 5:30. We have a closing circle. There is a free lunch that is catered by People's Cafe. You should go check them out, and which we're very excited about. And then afterwards is what Splash also said. After around 7, we're going to do drinks and decompress at Formosa Cafe. And then on Sunday, because, you know, this is maybe in line with kind of what we're talking about in terms of, like, the desire for some kind of actions or something to take place. So Sunday, after a night of kind of, like, lots of activity and stuff like that, then you're also invited to a brunch and Next Steps at this Airbnb that we have. It's very close. All of it's very close to Plumber Park. And People's Cafe is also going to be catering with some waffles. And then we will, talk about what happened and make plans. And then there'll be another RevCon next year. And then I believe, like, Flower Arrangement, I'm just going to say it, it's a band that they are going to play live. And there's, like, a small pool. And, yeah, it's a whole weekend.
It's hilarious. I met my daughter's boyfriend's mom today, and she is a teacher of Ikebana. So when you said Flower Arrangement, I'm like, oh, we're doing Ikebana? Wow.
Oh, we should do that too. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I think they do some kind of things with flowers. yeah. So that's it. Thanks for listening to the show. Hopefully it kind of, I don't know, answer some of the FAQs.
Did you mention the website? I don't think you mentioned the website.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. RevCon.therevolution.school. That's RevCon dot therevolution.school. SCHOOL. We'll get you connected to everything related.
Woohoo! Come! Yes, come! Also, RSVP so we know how many people to get lunch is for.
Yeah. Free lunch, free conference.
Yeah.
Free Palestine.
Yes, exactly.
It will be unforgettable.
Hell yes. Okay, so I'm going to do the outro. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you at RevCon, August 14th to the 16th.
Bye. Talk to you both. Bye.
Bye. Oh my gosh, it's taking a long time.